How do we all keep making aviation safer? That was the topic at AOPA's Pavilion Tuesday in a panel discussion that looked at recent accidents and incidents, system vulnerabilities, and how a range of stakeholders all play a role in continuous safety improvements. AOPA's Chief Executive Darren Pleasance sees from the data that flying is still incredibly safe, even if social media make it seem otherwise.
It's down and to the right, meaning number of accidents as well as fatalities have been dropping, not only in the airlines, and the fact that it was almost 20 years, like you said, between the most recent one and the prior one speaks volumes. So if you look at general aviation, the sheer magnitude of activity happening in general aviation dwarfs the airlines. Airlines have about 6,000 airliners. There's over 200,000 general aviation airplanes that are flying every single day. So just the sheer volume is tremendous, and the fact is, the actual accident rate and fatality rate is dropping dramatically. So it is far safer than most people would believe. There are also just some helpful statistics exactly to the point that was just made. If you look at the general public who see these things out there in the press, and they often get nervous about these little airplanes falling out of the sky, and to the extent that they're worried that somehow it's going to affect them personally, we looked over the last decade, and there were 25 incidences where, call it an innocent bystander, was affected by an aircraft impacting them. We looked over the same amount of time, over that same period of time, 10 years. There were 216 people struck and killed by lightning over that same 10 years. There were 375,000 innocent bystanders struck by a car. So imagine crossing a pedestrian crossing a crosswalk or similar. And so exactly to the point made, if you look at it relatively, airplanes are incredibly safe, and the trends are absolutely in the right direction. It's just that because it's so easy to see stuff in today's social media world, and it's sensational, right? And so there's a very misinformed perception of aviation and the safety of it, and that's part of our job is to change that perception.
John Murdoch is the safety chair from NATCA, the National Air Traffic Controllers Association. And John says that runway incursions are the biggest safety concern of controllers.
Runway incursions offer the most risk into the NAS still, right? And we did talk about them quite often in 2023. Just to give a little perspective, back in 23, there was 52 million takeoff and landings that year. We had 1,600 runway incursions, mid-20s of the worst. So trying to put that in perspective, we're doing really well. But there's a lot of risk associated with a runway incursion. And I know the chairwoman would be excited for me to say, and I we truly believe it, we want to reduce them to zero if we could. I don't know that we'll ever get to zero, but the better we do, the less risk we have. So runway incursions continues to be on the top of the list, and paying attention to what's going on at surface. It's high energy and everybody's low close in.
Murdoch, again from NATCA, says the lessons learned from recent runway incursions are that
generally people thought they were doing what they were supposed to do. Either the controller thought they issued the correct clearance, or the pilot or the flight crew was executing the correct clearance. So just having that vigilance and diligence to take some time and think about what's going on, paying attention to the surroundings, seeing if there's an arrival departure, just taking that extra second, really paying attention, and I guess I would say, if you need that extra second, asking for it.
Looking specifically at the safety of general aviation, Mike Ginter, who heads up AOPA's Air Safety Institute, says we are doing something right.
We fly 28 million hours in general aviation every year. That's by the FAA's General Aviation Activity Survey. And for 32 years, our fatal accident rate's been declining. 2022 is the safest year ever. I think we were like a 0.71 fatal accidents per 100,000 hours. It fluctuates a little bit, but it's been going down for 32 years. Last year, 2024, we're still waiting for the denominator, but we had incredibly reduced number of accidents, way below our goal. We set ourselves a really tough goal, which is 1% reduction in fatal accidents every year. That's through the General Aviation Joint Safety Committee, FAA, AOPA, and EAA. We tri-chair that thing. And we set a pretty aggressive goal, 10% over 10 years, 1% a year. So we know exactly how many accidents we're allowed to have on a monthly basis. And in 2025, on April 24th, we did the data, and we had 17% fewer accidents as of April 24th, which was about the 10th big nationally publicized accident compared to 2024. So 25 was already safer than 24, but that's not what the public thought, right? The public perception was huge. And I'm happy to say that as of June 30th, the FAA gives us some great data, but we track it on a monthly basis. We're 67 fatal accidents lower than our June 30th goal was allowed to be. And we're 13 fatal accidents less than where we were this time last year. So we are doing something right. And that's 28 million flight hours, which has been climbing for at least a decade.
Pete Muntean is a journalist and a pilot who moderated the safety panel. He asked this question, what can pilots do? And the answer comes from Mike Ginter with the Air Safety Institute.
What are the top three things that they can go out and do with a flight instructor or wings credit or what is it?
Fly in the middle of the air. That was on a poster in 1915 with a ragwing biplane hanging in a tree all by itself in the desert. Had all the top 10 things you have to do to be a safe pilot. And one of them was fly in the middle of the air. Most of the loss control accidents are Bernoulli management. It's airspeed. Or maybe you're above stall speed, but you put too much G on in the base to final turn. The loss of control in flight is responsible for 42% of our fatal accidents every year, and that number hasn't changed. Number two is down at 10%. So we're focusing most of our energy on loss of control in flight, education, training, tips. We're even working on some things within the GAJSC to improve some of the airman certification standards to enrich in that part of the training syllabus without adding hours to it. So it's airspeed management, airspeed and G management. You know, if you're in an overshooting turn to final, don't hack it. You know, add power, level your wings, and let go around and try it again.
Updating regulations often increases regulatory burden, but Basic Med brought about a change that did make things better for pilots all around. Here's Darren Pleasance of AOPA.
Basic Med is a good example where there was no statistically relevant data that would suggest Basic Med versus third class medicals made any difference from a safety outcome. And so being able to make it easier for people to fly, there's over 90,000 people who've benefited from Basic Med. You made the point around ADS-B. You know, AOPA's taken a pretty public position on this around, you know, ADS-B is an amazing technology from a safety perspective. I personally would love every airplane to have ADS-B. I think out for sure, but in is also a great technology for situational awareness. Our concern is that you start to see regulations, in this case, lack of regulations that are allowing people to use ADS-B in ways that discourage others from adopting it, whether that is landing fees or FAA enforcement or otherwise. So to me, there's some good momentum that's beginning to crop up in the government, in the FAA, and also within Congress that recognize the value of things like ADS-B and putting in or advocating now for constraints on how that that information, that the out data from ADS-B can be used so that more people are motivated to invest in putting that kind of technology in their plane.
Murdoch from NATCA described some of the risks that come with avionics that are so accurate that you can fly on the very edge of airspace with little margin for error.
And it gets complicated. And so you don't have to talk to us. We'd rather you talk to us so we could talk to you and we could get everybody on the same page. But as that fidelity gets better, you're able to get closer and more accurate to that airspace, and it makes it more difficult for us to do operations in and around that area.
An audience question at this panel presentation on aviation safety dealt with whether older pilots are less safe. The panel's answer addressed both safety data and those pilots' insurance premiums.
My question is, as an older pilot, are we at higher risk? Are we a problem or not really?
The number of pilots in the senior age groups, we have it in 5-year buckets, is commensurate with the number of accidents in all other age groups. Older pilots are not crashing at a higher rate. And you're not crashing for different reasons. And we've looked at that from 60 to 65, 66 to 70, 71 to 75, all the way up to 85. We have active GA pilots well into their 90s. You're doing something right, keep doing it. The best thing you can do, you, all of us with gray hair, fly more. And not just the pancake breakfast. Go out and challenge yourself, get a CFI to make you sweat. Don't use your best friend for your flight review. Get on ASI's website, pull down a focused flight review, and go get your money's worth.
Another question in this forum dealt with whether flight training overemphasizes pilot tech at the expense of stick and rudder skills.
Flight training has evolved, especially with the advent and emergence of technically advanced aircraft. There's a lot more time spent on the systems and how do you operate the airplane rather than fly the airplane, I would argue. And I think it's an and. I think it's great that a lot of the technologies today really do add a margin of safety, whether it's the Autoland that Cirrus has introduced through Garmin, and whether it's the, you know, you roll the bank 45 degrees and it tries to bring you back. There's a bunch of that stuff. AOAs, there's a lot of things out there that I think do help. However, I think oftentimes I'm seeing that comes at the expense of what I'd call just core stick and rudder training, to Pete's point a few minutes ago. And I think there's huge value in everybody having, I'll call it, foundational flying skills, where you learn how to use your feet, your hands, your eyes to fly the airplane. And it does mean, to that envelope point, you're not just getting close to the edge and backing off, which is how a lot of flight training happens today. And I think we got multiple generations of instructors who've barely done stalls, who've maybe only done one spin in order to get their CFI sign off, and they never go close to that again, versus someone who's doing spins on a regular basis on airplanes that are appropriate for that. They're very comfortable operating at the edge, so that someday when they inadvertently find themselves at that edge, it's not a big deal. Stalling an airplane is not a big deal as long as you respond correctly. So I believe we've got a fundamental gap in how we drive core stick and rudder skills that would serve foundationally to make a better pilot, whether you're on your way to the airlines or flying some little GA airplane. So you'll see AOPA playing a big role in conversations with the FAA on how do we modify the whole training syllabus, as well as advocating for more of you in the audience and everyone we know to self-select into going and getting some tailwheel training, some upset recovery training, some aerobatic training. So that's not just my personal view, but you'll see AOPA playing a much stronger role in advocating for that.
Those are highlights from a panel discussion at AirVenture Oshkosh 2025 on aviation safety, hosted by AOPA. For EAA Radio, I'm Mike Morgan.